in life for free.
Well, welcome back to Sax and Jax. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. We have Matt Weber here as well. We're loaded up here this morning for the big rally. We're ready for the rally. We're limit up here. We're not sure.
Hey, Keith, don't forget about me.
You're here. I didn't say you were here yet. I'm just, you know, I'm just giving the markets here. SP Futures up limit. NASDAQ Futures up limit. 113. NASDAQ Futures up 375. You don't normally see that in stocks, although guys like Brendan used to run around with, like, limit up on their license plates because they made a fortune on, like, corn being limit up or something. I could see you doing that. Just saying.
Good bond deals.
Yeah, good deals. And we've got, we don't exactly know why we're limit up. It could be any one of three things. The Fed came out and just told everybody they're going to turn on the printing press and give everybody a check yesterday. So then we have the Senate and, the Democrats and Republicans are fighting back and forth over pieces of the pie. I'd love to get my nose into this bill and read some of the stuff that's in there that probably doesn't need to be in there, but then again, there where would be the fun if you didn't put stuff in for your people? Never waste a good bill, never waste a good crisis, Brendan, they say.
That's right. That's right. And we've got that from our own former mayor, but the Republicans and the Democrats in Washington right now are doing the same thing.
I was never for the line item veto because it gives the president too much power, but I'm not so sure. I could almost be coerced these days, Brendan.
Yes, these are strange times when a lot of our thoughts and theories kind of go out the window.
Yeah.
But what scares me even more is, did you hear the question at the briefing yesterday when a reporter was asking about the stalling of the bill in the Senate? And one of the sticking points was this $500 billion fund with very little authority or direction or limits on how it's to be used. And Trump looked with all seriousness and said, well, I'll be the arbiter. I'll be the backstop on this. I can be the decider to make sure it's all used properly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's...
what could possibly go wrong?
No. I mean, what could possibly? It's funny, Brent. We've been... Our man, our executive producer, Mr. Matt Weber, and I have been going back and forth on this.
By the way, Matt, congratulations on getting married.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We don't even know if his mic's turned on. The associate producer refused to turn his mic on, I think.
Am I on yet?
Yes, you're on. I think you're on now.
Okay.
She'll show you.
But yes, if you didn't hear me the first time, thank you, Brendan. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And, boy, talk about timing. So what if you guys would have gotten canceled if it was a week later and put off for a year? You think you still would have gone through with it?
I think we would have, but a lot of people are facing that. And I can tell you, as someone that put a lot of time and effort and money and stress into planning a wedding for the last 10 months, that would really suck. We were fortunate when we randomly picked the date that we picked. The reason we picked that date, I guess it wasn't completely random, is that we wanted to do a spring day, but we didn't want to interfere with St. Patrick's Day festivities or March Madness or a lot of the things that people care about. Turns out none of those things happened and were canceled. But so we picked the first week of March, and that was the last possible Saturday before everything started shutting down in the U.S. So we were very fortunate and grateful for that. But a lot of people are having their stuff canceled or postponed, and that sucks.
So if you postpone,
and you will always remember the year that you got married, because everybody will always talk about the year there was no March Madness, there was no spring training, there was no on and on and on. And so, yeah, that's the year that we got married.
Right, exactly. 2020, we were the last Saturday before the world changed forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a real stupid question. Is the county building closed? Can you still sneak over there and get married?
I think the county building is closed, and I do not think that the clerk who does the marriage ceremonies is considered an essential service. But you can find different people. For example, there were some masses at Old St. Pat's over the weekend only for getting married. There were several weddings that were performed on Saturday at Old St. Pat's, but the only people who were in attendance were the bride, the groom, the priest who administered who said the mass, and I think the two attendants, the best man and the maid of honor. There were no other guests, not even the parents of the bride and groom were allowed in the church.
Why do you kiss the bride, among other things, if you're 6 feet apart?
Well, remember, there's an exception that you can live with somebody who's part of your family.
Yeah, you're not going to be...
Once the ceremony is done, they're family, they can kiss. They can get within 6 feet.
you're not going to be 6 feet apart from somebody you live with.
I know, that's my point. You can if you're living with somebody, you can be less than 6 feet apart.
Aren't you?
And so once they're married, they're family, and they can legally do that.
Exactly. You've already got the same things, Chief.
I cannot believe that either one of you guys, liberal that you are, has the nerve to even say that the government can tell you how far away from somewhere you can stand.
That I've never once looked at it as the government telling me. I've looked at it as scientists and doctors recommending it.
Ah.
Me too. I've not looked about this as a government position.
I couldn't care less.
I heard about this from people like Fauci and other doctors who are saying, you know, we got to keep the social distancing because if you're closer than that, you have a higher likelihood of getting sick.
You think I would listen to our president ever about anything?
Well, it's not just
him. That's insane.
It's not just him. It's a whole... I mean, Maddie and I are having this ongoing battle about this, and
I don't think we're having a battle. I'm literally just siding with the doctors and the scientists. That's it.
And
if they're wrong, then they're wrong. They're the experts. I'm not an expert, so I'm not going to pretend to be.
My concern, Brendan, is that I don't care who you are. You could be Solomon, and if you don't have any data, your decisions are questionable.
This has been going on for over 3 months. Hundreds of thousands of people affected. We have a lot of data.
I'm in the same camp as Maddie. Even if they don't have all the data, they've got a lot more data than the president's got. And his feeling that things are going to work out because these medicines are a game changer. Things that have worked 20 years ago for malaria all of a sudden are going to work now. And the science is right behind me saying, we don't know the impact of them. I'm going with the scientists before I go with Trump and his gut.
I'm gonna.
You keep listening to the game show host, Chief.
Well, all I'm saying is that the gentleman, my total bitch on this, Brendan, has been that I in preparation. You know, it's not about what happens on the field. It's about did you prepare for it properly? Because the stuff happens on the field. If you can't react, I'm stunned that the supply line is the way it is. And I don't think Trump's the guy, but. And I don't want to be the guy, but if I was there...
The federal government is the guy, and you're right. We're in agreement there.
I'll tell you what, when this is over, if it's me, I'm dragging two idiots from both sides of the aisle, whether they want to or not, two people that can talk and spell. And I'm saying, look at this. I want to know, a lot of this to me, I mean, I don't know how much worse this is than a regular flu. It looks to me like the numbers... are that it's maybe somewhat worse than the worst flu, okay? I don't know. I mean, and nobody knows when the tale is all told. I think that somehow or another we've had. Let's pick Chicago. I think that they were overrun by a regular flu year just to start with. Now my question is, we've allowed how many hospitals to close? Is there anybody here I could ask? Is there a Solomon someplace where I'd say, by the way, given 9/11, given the fact that we were always worried about a bioweapon, we're worried about something like this, how many hospital beds should we have in Chicago on an ongoing basis, and how many hospital beds should we be able to expand into, since a lot of these hospitals now are so friggin' big, even though they're not rooms, in a crisis situation? I bet nobody knows the number. And if somebody comes up with the number, I bet it's nowhere near what we have. But this is 20 years after the fact, Brendan. And then I'm going to say, mm-hmm. Wait, does anybody know what the supply chain is for? Give me 50 of the things you know you need the most. Well, you know you need masks. You know you need hospital gowns. You know you need, maybe ventilators. I don't know. I mean, but there's got to be a list of saline solution. Anyway, where do we source all this stuff? How much do we have in reserve? In a pinch, how many? And if everything doubled, could we service people? I think the answer mm-hmm. comes back that. For 50 of them, they're China, they're Puerto Rico, they're God knows where. We have no idea. And, oh, by the way, we have a two-day reserve. This mm-hmm. this blows. This is
not... I agree. That we were completely unprepared for that. But the second part of this is that at this point, you know, I think back to the mobilization of the United States in 1939, 1940, 1941. 39 and 40 was when we were making munitions and sending them over to Britain under a Lend-Lease program. But after Pearl Harbor, America was mobilized with direct orders from the president to build tanks, to build airplanes, et cetera. I don't think that Trump has yet told anybody to build masks, to make masks, or to make ventilators or anything else. He's waiting for somebody else to do it, but he's not taking responsibility.
Well, the idea that the governors all go bid for the stuff and they're outbidding each other is so absurd.
Yeah,
I can't even.
It's
insane. I can't even get there. I mean, it's.
It's really frustrating that the governors have to compete against each other.
But how could we?
And against the federal government.
Yeah,
the FEMA's in there, too.
Yep.
Well, but it all comes down to...
I was encouraged, though, Chief, about the Illinois business leaders stepping up, at least from what I'm reading, in different ways, and saying, screw this, we're going to make them ourselves for our own state. And obviously, it may be too little too late, or it's certainly behind, but at least it's something, and a little... ingenuity and people stepping up for their home state, I think is pretty cool.
Well, what about your...
I agree with that. And also, you know, groups like Amazon for taking masks out of their supplies, I guess they use that for making their computers, and a lot of their workers have masks and things, and they are donating them. You know, I've seen some Facebook posts from nurses at hospitals, and the response has been, I found a box of 20. Where can I drop them off? Things like that.
Tattoo shops and nail salon parlors and places like that are starting to donate all their masks and gloves and stuff too, which is encouraging at least.
Well, but now are we going to do, if I make it another 15 years and something happens 15 years from now, are we going to throw the same crap, or are we going to fix it this time? But this is not on Trump. This is how many presidents have been here since 9/11?
Three.
And it's a constant degradation. And I think that this guy, Fauci, was once a brilliant man, and I think he's rolling with the idea that we're not going to waste a test on somebody who doesn't show symptoms. I think that's a horrible idea in this particular disease, because this disease is different than most others.
Well, in 6 months or 9 months or whenever, when we have enough tests, I'm rolling with you, Chief. But I don't know if we can wait 6 or 9 months.
Well, I
agree with that too.
I don't think it's going to be 6 or 9 months. I think
until we have 330 million tests.
I don't think we'll have 330, but I think we'll have enough.
What's enough?
We need enough to find out what's going on.
All right. Here's an example. Here's a good friend of mine who ran track and cross country at Loyola. He was an alternate on the Olympic team in 1968. He's now 73 years old. He was out in Colorado in a hot spot where a lot of people tested positive. So here he is, 73 years old, out in the mountains. When he went to the doctor, he had a cough and he was short of breath because of being at a high altitude. He was sent from his doctor to the hospital to two other areas, to two other entities to try to get a test. They would not give him a test. Now, how many risk factors do you have to show before you get a test? And this was a couple of weeks ago.
So if he came in, they slapped him on a ventilator, and the guy was going to croak in 4 hours, then they'd test him.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
What did you say, your cousin, Chief, had a similar story?
Yeah, my cousin had pneumonia and everything. Didn't give him a test either. And he's like 70-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had a...
And that's just a failing of the system to get the test out. I agree with the statement that we don't know how big this problem is because we don't know how many people have contracted it. Now, I'm not saying that we need to test all 330 million
you don't.
People in the country, but you've got to test more than what we've got right now. I mean, for God's sake, we've tested fewer people than they test in South Korea.
I think when you have a situation like, let's say you had, let's pick my alma mater, Notre Dame, and they're going to close, they closed down, right? Well, they did say people had nowhere to go could stay there, which was nice of them. You've got 7,000 people living in dorms, and you've got another 1,000 people in the faculty. All right, you throw 8,000 names in a hat, you random sample it, you come up with 300 names, and you go and give them a test. So, you know, so I was reading last night, since there's no sports on, I was reading last night about one of the ways to figure out what you have is to take small groupings, and before you let them go, you test them and find out what you've got. So at Notre Dame, if you found out that half the people have it, well, then you don't let anybody go home. You take care
of it. And you also test more people.
Well, but, I mean, your sample is probably pretty sound. If you get the right people, I'm real big on sampling, if you do it right, but it's so hard to do it right that nobody ever does it. But if you actually could pull it off at a college, you'd say, where the hell is that Brendan guy? And you'd find him, right? I mean, it's pretty hard to do in regular society.
What does, and I'm asking this honestly, what does sampling help in any way?
You know what you're dealing with.
But what does, and then what? What does that help?
Well, I'm saying, I think the decision to send people home, if you knew 30% of the people had it, you might not do it.
We're way past that.
Well, no, we're not. We're not even there.
We've already sent people home.
Okay.
So we're past that. So what?
Well, we still have other
what
areas.
What does sample testing do right now? I'm asking honestly. I'm not trying to fight with you.
I think right now if you sample New York, you've got, they're panicking because the hospitals are full.
Right.
Okay. Well, the hospitals might be full normally anytime, and if you got an extra 1,000 people, they're full, which is what I said earlier. But I think you need to know in the pick a borough in Manhattan that based on your sample, there's say 2 million people there. Looks to us like 400,000 people have it. How many people are in the hospital that have it? How many people maybe have already say they had it a couple of weeks ago and don't have it anymore? You need to know what you're dealing with, and you don't know.
Manny, I think where it comes down to where you need, where even it's still a viable question to ask, why do we need testing right now, is to still see what are the limits of what we're dealing with. Is it going to be, we only have 15 cases, and they're going to be down to zero pretty
right.
soon, or is it, my God, we've found 45,000, but realistically, based on our sample size, we're looking at 4.5 million or 450,000 or something else. Or we've got just about everybody who's going to be infected.
Actually,
without
Brendan,
knowing who else is out there and can still be infecting people who are asymptomatic. For example, Rand Paul, when he was tested last weekend, he was asymptomatic. He was in the Senate dining room. He was in the pool in the Senate gym facilities, asymptomatic. Now, he got a test. And, just like the guys in the NBA got their tests ahead of the line, and most of them were asymptomatic. In fact, I haven't said anybody who had symptoms yet when they were tested, and yet they were potentially spreading the disease. Like Rudy Gobert from the Jazz could have infected other people on his team and on the NBA.
Actually,
some of the
Brandon,
teams that played against them were positive.
My opinions on this are skewed, shall I say, is because one of the listeners sent me this German study. Of course, every study I read that seems like there's scientists behind it comes from overseas and not here, which is starting to bother me. But these guys took, I don't know how they started in January, and they started taking people from stem to stern. They started, evidently in this one area they had enough tests. Well, however they got the information, I don't know. But most diseases, when I say most, I'm not an expert, but a lot of diseases, you aren't contagious until you have a symptom.
Right.
Okay. Every disease has kind of a different path, when you're contagious and when you're not. This one appears to be very unique in that this is what these guys have found. So amazingly, when you first get it, like on day one or two, when you have zero symptoms, and they're talking about they tried to get the virus to grow in people's urine, they couldn't do it. So they're not worried about that. They tried to grow it in people's stool, they couldn't do it. They're pretty much not worried about that, except if you're in an area where people have other kinds of problems, like, you know, if you had Montezuma's Revenge the same time you had it, you might have a problem. But basically, that's not an issue. So it's picking it up off surfaces and picking it up from, they call it mucus. When you breathe, a certain amount of stuff comes out of your throat, okay, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And at this particular, from day two through day four or five, when you start to pick up symptoms, you're something like 1,000 times more contagious than SARS. In the minute you get a symptom, your body starts fighting the symptoms, and in so doing, drops your contagion down very dramatically, almost from hour one, to where on day seven or eight, you're probably barely able to get somebody else a problem. And at day 10, even though the virus is in your system, it'll be picked up by a test, it probably is not at a level at which you could get somebody else sick. So it's exactly the opposite of a lot of other diseases. So by reading that article, my thought is you've got to catch people in this first 3 or 4 days. If you wait until they have the symptoms, they've already infected everybody they're going to infect. So it needs to be dealt with differently because it is different.
So I agree with that. So let me get back to my original question because you guys haven't answered it. What does testing accomplish on a sample?
You've got to find out how many people are in those first few days.
So let me finish my question. So right. Manhattan, the perfect example you gave, 2 million people in Manhattan. Let's say we get, I don't know what a sample size you need for 2 million people. Is it 2,000?
Depends on if you can get the person.
Right. So let's say you're able to get a good random sample of 2,000, and all you need is 2,000 tests,
yep.
which we should probably have 2,000 tests. I would think we do in New York,
right.
but who knows? I think I read as of March 22nd, which is just 2 days ago, we'd only tested 62,000 people in the United States. Hopefully that number's gone way up since then. But anyway, so let's say you test 2,000, you find half the people have it. Of the 2,000, so 1,000 out of 2,000.
You got to keep those people away from anybody older for sure.
So you've tested out of the 2 million, you've tested 2,000. You know 1,000 have it, 1,000 don't. So you got to keep the 1,000 that have it, whether they have symptoms or not, away. The other 1,000, I don't know what you turn them loose. But what have you really accomplished outside of those two helping those 2,000 people? Are you assuming?
Well, you also start to trace who they've been in contact
right.
with. Have they been in the grocery store? Which grocery store right. have they been to? Who are the likely people in the community to have used the same grocery store? Have they gone to a going back a couple of weeks, have they gone to a concert? Have they done things in large group? Or have they just been around people in their family?
Well, the first thing you do is you say...
see how far it could possibly
be. But are you assuming that 1 million out of the 2 million have it? And if so...
You don't
then
know.
What,
that's what you're, that's then why what, you're, fine, that's what you're trying to find out.
Right, but then what can you do? What do
well,
you do?
First thing you do...
I don't think it accomplishes anything, is my point.
If I found out that you were on your second day, I'd say get the hell home.
Everyone already is home.
Well, I'm saying it's more important for you and stay away from anybody older person. I mean, you're right. What
but
doing,
I'd like to think we're okay. a week past that and everyone already is home and everyone is staying away from older people.
Well, now, but now
the
we
The problem
have,
is that we're not. The problem is, Maddie, that we're not staying home. There
well,
are a lot of
people
who are not
most
staying home
are.
And are still congregating. Look at over the weekend, the cherry blossoms in Washington, D.C. The streets were packed. The mall was packed. Look at the beaches even a week ago in Florida.
I don't
look at people like Devin Nunez saying go out and party, go out and have dinner, go out to a restaurant. You know, the governor of Oklahoma is saying I'm going to continue dining out. They haven't locked down the states yet.
I'm not
Your
so
point
sure.
is valid in a place like New York or Chicago, but not in states or areas where
whole,
it hasn't been locked down yet.
We also have a whole bunch of people telling other people what to do. They're selling. I guarantee you, Brendan, if I went and played golf with Matt Weber, we wouldn't be within 6 feet of each other the whole round. I'd be in a rough.
A lot of people are still playing golf where it's warm.
California, they closed. But the guy in California was outraged because guys were surfing. Tell me who the hell I'm going to infect on a surfboard by myself. I mean, where we get to the point now where old people are just bitching at young people that we're not doing what they tell them to do. But, you know what I'm saying? I think we need some information here.
But to get back to the question... Because I still have
the question, Matty. Is
I still don't feel like I'm getting a good answer.
You know what? You don't know until you get the data. If you
I told you the data. The hypothetical data is half the people have it over 2,000 sample size. So what do you do?
If half the people have it, it's like the common cold. You're just going to get it.
Okay. So we tested 2,000
right.
people. We found that half the people have it, and then we say you're just going to get it, and that's
and,
it.
And
it. So what did we accomplish?
What do you mean?
You can also find clusters. You can also find neighborhoods
right. yes.
or cities and towns or states
right.
that have a higher or lesser concentration of it right now and try to track down where it came from, how it got there, and stop it from spreading because you've identified how many people. You know that it's likely to be spreading a lot further, so you've identified the core group of people, and you can isolate not only them but people they've been in contact with for the last week.
Brendan, the second story I read sent to us by, I believe it was David or not. Not David Animal, David Parks. One town in Italy, I don't know how big it was, they said, okay, we're going to go test everybody. I'll say it's 500 people. They tested everybody, and they found like 100 people that had it. They said, you quarantine yourself for 14 days. And the 400 people who didn't, they said, you continue doing what you're going to do. And by the way, in 2 weeks, they have no cases.
That's testing everybody.
Yeah,
that's a big difference.
Big difference, but at least
that's my point.
Okay,
testing a small sample does nothing.
Testing everybody
is what we want
to get to, but
we don't have 330 million tests.
One does not preclude the other. I said if I sample, at least I know what I've got. Then I might say, well, gee, an awful lot of these people are at NYU. All right, so let's put a ring around NYU and test everybody there and say the people in NYU that have it. Go to the infirmary. The rest of you stay in the dorm. One does not preclude the other. I'm just
my point is, I think that's a sound plan, but that would have had to have happened 2 weeks ago. It's too late for that.
But it should have happened month
ago. I agreed. It should have, but it's too late for that, so there's no point in harping on it.
Some places, it hasn't even broken out yet.
Where?
There's some states that, I'm going to say there's some cities.
That have zero cases?
Yeah.
I highly
doubt
that.
No. Every state has cases.
Yeah, I bet there's. I think that's
West
made
Virginia
up.
West Virginia was the last holdout.
I bet there's. I bet there's.
And they're starting to grow. They went from zero to 150 in a matter of days.
I'll bet there's all kinds of small to mid-sized towns that don't have any cases.
Well, that's true. Have you looked at the map of Russia? There's only a red dot at Moscow. There's nothing else in the rest of Russia.
Well, how do you get from Moscow to anywhere else in Russia?
Good question.
Well, that doesn't matter, but the fact is that if you look at the map, you've got, Moscow or Russia is this huge mass of landmass, and there's a red dot over Moscow and no place else in Russia. I think we all ought to be drinking vodka or something.
If everybody, if somebody
who says we're not,
if somebody had it in Siberia, who do you think would care?
I don't think that information is legit.
Oh, no, AV wants to break in on the Russian situation. She's an expert. So you ever been to Siberia, AV?
Oh, no. But I have friends, actually, from Siberia.
Oh, God.
I wouldn't trust it.
You wouldn't trust them?
I would agree. I wouldn't trust their information, like I don't trust China.
Let me get this straight. Somebody from the Ukraine doesn't trust the Russians? I'm shocked. There's gambling in this establishment. S&P Futures
here's
up.
Here's your winning, sir.
Yeah, here's your winning. S&P Futures up one. Hey, we just popped off limit, 109, 110, but we're stuck back again at limit. By the way, at limit, you can sell, you just can't buy, for those of you who don't know that, because it's bid limit. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason.
I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Angelica Vlasenko on the board. Executive producer Matt Weber is sitting here grading her in one of the contributor chairs, and he'll be out peeping as we go.
I'm giving her a sample test.
He's trying to kick the chief out as host, and he's probably doing better than me anyway. So
not doing better, just trying to keep it level here while you go through all your conspiracy theories.
I'm just saying. We got too many people working and spent too much money for incompetence. That's all I'm saying. I'm just, especially after 9/11. S&P futures up limit 113. Nasdaq futures up limit 240. Although we're starting to trade here, so we're right at limit. Even though the S&P, which is the S&P, the spiders is up 10 points. So it's about right where we are. So we're not like one of those days we were down limit, but we actually were down another 5%. We're pretty much trading right here. Dow up 793, which is that limit. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 516, 5.9%. The FTSE up 189, 3.8. CAC around up 183, 4.7. So that's pretty even across the board. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 1,200 points, 7%. Shanghai up 62, 2%. The Nikkei was down yesterday. Hang Seng up 967, 446. Remember, they were down 1,000 yesterday, so they're flapping back and forth. Bonds. It's 0.79 is the interest rate in a 10-year. The Bund, 0.36. The Japan, minus 0.03. Now, remember, they were above zero a couple days ago. Hard keeping track of this stuff. Oil up a dollar, but 24.45. It did trade under 20, so this is a little bit of a good bounce back. Brent up 28.07. Natural gas, 162. RBOB, 46 cents, Matty. I'm pissed I filled up the Suburban. I need to go fill it up again, for God's sake. How do you do that? Gold up 98 bucks. 1665. I'm going to say my guys are going to have a good day. Silver up 67 cents. Not that I'm gloating or anything, man. I just might as well gloat. Copper actually up 6 cents, 216. There's a dead dog. I got long some FCX the other day for my people, which is the copper stock. It's absolutely been on its ass now for so long. Who knows? Maybe I picked a good time. What do they say? Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then?
That's right.
Isn't that what they say? AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It is 34 degrees currently in Chicago. Patchy morning fog will change to mix of clouds and sun. Mostly the day will remain cloudy. The highest of the day will be 41 and the low is 34. 54 degrees currently in Phoenix. Sunny and clear day with a few passing clouds at night. The highest 78 and the lowest 55 of the day. Traffic is clear and no delays despite a couple of accidents. A crash on Belmont and Kimball Avenue involving Chicago Police Department and Eisenhower inbound rollover crash reported on the ramp to North Avenue. Chip?
What about sports?
No sports? Canceled.
Maddie, let's just say your understudy here is so happy that there's no sports.
She sounded good. That was good.
But I'm saying that's the same sports report you get when there's like a full schedule.
Well, yeah. It's all right.
Why do I need to talk about Bulls? All they do is lose. It was the last. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good, good. What do you got? You got Matty Ice in the booth with you?
Yeah, Matty's here.
Yeah, what's up, Joel?
Yeah, are you co-hosting with the Chief now?
Yeah.
I'm co-hosting with the Chief today. Everyone's out sick, so I had to step up.
Well, not only that, AV wanted to come in, and I don't want to...
Outs of German bonds and interest rates and everything that the European Union ever does?
I defer to you on those types of questions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Matty, I heard you got married and you had a honeymoon. Where'd you go?
We went down to Riviera Maya. And it just for a week, and it was great. And then until the last 2 days when the world started to end and we were in a different country, and that was kind of surreal. But other than that, it was great.
So you didn't have to cut it short?
No, we flew back, and fortunately, we flew back into Midway, and so we didn't run into that mess at O'Hare. And it was actually pretty easy getting through customs at Midway.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
Well, last week, the mess was at Midway.
All right, Chief. What do you want to talk about?
We've got the Fed action of yesterday. Now, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to say something nice about what's going on in Washington, which is scary for me. But,
well, that is very scary.
They're using the playbook that they think they should have used in 1930, but they are attempting this time to bring money back into the system. Now, there's two things here. One is you can't create wealth by creating money. Okay, anybody who listens to the show, I think, understands that. However, when something like this happens, you're going to get a natural drop in the money supply, dramatic drop that you don't want. So you have to make up for that. But now in the 30s, they thought just throwing money into the system would do it. But between the Fed and the Congress here, what they're trying to do, now how efficient they'll be because they're greedy sucks to start with, they're trying to force that money down the system to where the person who's actually getting hurt is going to get some of it. Now, that appears to be the attempt. Now, whether it gets there or not, you know, we've seen this happen before. But if that's the attempt, Joel, I absolutely applaud it, to be honest with you.
Okay. I have mixed feelings here, Chief. And,
well, so do I.
You know, we talked about this yesterday. And, I this Fed action is needed, right? But I'm still very uneasy about, you know, throwing money at this. This is not a financial situation,
right?
Okay? This is a health crisis. And, I just can't get it out of my head that, yeah, we can do all these things, but, man, oh, man, I mean, I just think there's a bigger problem here that's not being addressed.
Well,
and that makes me nervous. So, yeah, the Spoozer lock limit. I mean, you gotta admit that every Fed action so far has been faded and faded and faded hard. Now, I don't know if that's going to talk today. It happened today. And I am not going to, you're very rarely will you hear Joel Alcott and say he's not going to short the market. But in this kind of situation, who wants to get caught in a limit up? This is really a very strange day in the market to be limit up like that. I'm looking at the limit bid right now. It's 3,000 contracts. And, it's tricky. Today's it's almost like totally manipulated to go higher because people are afraid to go short. So it's a weird situation, Chief. We talked yesterday. I'm still extremely concerned that the right things aren't being addressed. This is something that, the financial crisis and the internet bubble and the stock market crash of 87 all rolled into one, Chief, in my opinion.
I would say, I think, first of all, I think you need a stronger word than weird. Secondly, why is it, Joel, that no matter what happens, there's sacred cows? We're still not, with the market down close to 38% in some spots and some individual stocks down like 70 or 80%, we still can't raise that $3,000 limit on deductions. And we still can't have, God help us, if we have a credit card interest-free month to help people out, because we still have to jam money up to behind the banks, even though there's no more room up there where the sun don't shine. I mean, we still have our sacred cows here, and we still have... What do you make of these senators that so
did you see when I just said you can't short the market? We just came off the limit. Who's listening to your show, Chief?
Very interesting. Well, let's put this
I'm
way.
Sorry. What was your question
I'm
again?
Saying if you're going to short it, you want to short it this morning rather than last night.
If you think about it's a balance here. If you short it 33.50 and it comes off the limit, you're looking good. The problem is, if you shorted 33.50 here and it gets locked again, then you're gonna, you're gonna get hosed on the reopen. I mean, it's tough, but I'm just gonna let it shake out here this morning. I'm sorry. I'm watching the markets here, and you asked me a question.
No.
I'll answer that question again, and then I got to hop.
How come no matter what, we have these sacred cows? We, out of all the things we're supposedly forcing down the chain, you know, we make sure that if we give money to the big guy, that he cuts the rent of the little guy. I don't know how enforced that's going to be. Because Roosevelt tried to do that with sharecroppers, and the guys who owned the farms never worked its way down to the guys who were the sharecroppers, and then people went down to try and stop that, and they all got lynched. So it's kind of hard to spread this money around because some people...
Yeah, why can't we just give it to the people that need it? You say
well,
this every time, and
do.
We never do.
Well, they're trying to do that this time, send everybody a $3,000 check.
Yeah. A buddy of mine sent... We were talking about this yesterday online, and I can't even, remember exactly, what he said, but... it's basically, they're willing to help out, the people that own billions, okay?
Yeah.
But, the people that own smaller amounts are not getting their forgiveness. It's complicated. I mean, I guess if the banks go, then we're totally toast, Chief. So that's the way I look at it.
So,
but,
Joel,
guys, I got to hop, okay?
All right, Joel,
next Tuesday.
All right, real quick question before you go. If you're charging somebody 25% a month, don't you think you could go without 1 month?
Yes.
All right, Dash, buddy. Knock him dead today, man, my friend.
Okay. All right, Chief. Email me if you need something, okay?
Individual stocks, Boeing, after a low of 90, they shut down production yesterday, and now they're up to 115. I don't know if they shut down all production. I thought they did. Closed some plants. Apple's up 8, and they're trading 233.20. Managers, there's a lot going on in this whole mess, and some people are going to get help, and some people aren't, as usual. This whole stock buyback routine is bothering somebody. The board systems, like it was mentioned yesterday, to me have been wrecked for. This is not a new story to me. I think one of the things, anyway, there's so much back and forth on the show, and I won't say argument. Is I take this just as yet another example of the incompetence we've shown for the last 20 years. Going back to having guys flying airplanes, not caring if they know how to land them, and that report landed on the FBI desk and nobody knew anything about it. To me, it's just one thing after another. I mean, this is just the latest.
To argue against that.
I mean, it's this constant... the Fed is pouring money in. Now, what they're seeing is every normal walk of life here. Now, they're the ones that wrecked the federal funds market by having these banks not borrowing from each other anymore, but to lend the money to the Fed. Before so much money, this is a whole new system. Instead of the Fed, the banks taking care of each other, the Fed has interjected themselves into that system. So now when you have a crisis, they are the system. Which is not the way it's supposed to be. But you also can't tell me there's not a bank in trouble here, because somebody's not lending to somebody. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to put money in every single night. And, how much is the natural degradation? I've said that twice now, so we're not getting too detailed. If every single bank, Matty, can, and I don't know, I've gone through this before, and I'm sure you remember, every single bank, every group of people in a community can essentially create money, right? So if you and the lovely bride go in and drop $100,000 into the seminary bank, right, and then Eric from two doors down runs down and borrows $100,000, okay, and then puts it in a checking account at Seminary Bank, how much would the money supply, the money that the bank had on deposit was originally $1 million, right, you and Jill?
Okay.
Now how much is it now?
He just deposited...
$100,000.
It's 1.1 or
right.
2.1.
1.1.
Or one, you said $1 million. Yeah, 1.1.
All right, so we've actually created money. Correct?
Correct.
The way we define it. We didn't create wealth, right? Because the bank now has Eric owes the bank and so there's no wealth creation here, but there's money creation. So when things are going good and people are doing that and people are borrowing and banks are lending, the money supply naturally is going to go up in our system, okay? Because it's not one bank and not a Fed. The Fed is the only bank. So in good times, the Fed has to essentially put reserve requirements and has to have where they may actually make take money out of the system. They might go buy something from you or Jill to where you don't have $1 million, you only have $700,000 because they went and bought a bond from you or something, and you took money out of there and gave it to the Fed. So they can retard the system or accelerate the system, and that's what the Fed does, and it's a very serious job. Okay, but so in the good times, you're going to have natural money supply growth that the Fed has to essentially watch out for, because you don't want to go out too fast, because if it goes too fast, all of a sudden there's nothing but credit all over the place, and it end up being a bust. So the other way, now all of a sudden, for whatever reason, Eric goes, well, I don't need money for my project anymore. I'll pay off the loan. The money, when things get bad like this, your money supply naturally shrinks. So what the Fed has to do is has to inject money into the system to keep it going, because all of a sudden now if there isn't any credit, then people who do want to borrow, assuming there's still somebody out there, then they can't get it. So the Fed actually has a really tough job just to stay even. We're not even talking about policy here. We're just talking about keeping the system open, not too crazy and not too retarded. So when you add policy on top of that, now it's what you get. Oh my God, the commercial funds market. It's hard for somebody to go borrow overnight in a commercial funds market or borrow for a week. So we're going to have to go out there, and if somebody wants to sell some commercial paper, we're going to go buy it, because we're going to fix that market. Then all of a sudden the next day, oh no, it's the money markets. People are having a run on the money markets, and they've got so many, like a money market, if you did the math, like I'm big on statistics, if you do the math in a money market, say you and Joe have a money market, and you're going to say this money should be available for us anytime. That's the definition of a money market, right?
Right.
But if you look at it and you say, God, on our worst day, we got $1 billion in this thing. The biggest drawdown we've ever had, you know, was God knows when, 9/11 or something, was $100 million. So what's the harm in taking our last $100 million, which leaves us $900 million for people to come get today if they need it, which I never have, and we'll put that in some 6-month paper and not 1-day paper, even though our charter says that it should be available for you and Jill tomorrow. But more often than not, what's the difference? Let's get a little more interest on the, and you know what? How about the next $100 million? Why don't we can do that out for a week, say? Well, all of a sudden you have a crisis, and people say, okay, what the hell? Where's my money? And all of a sudden everybody wants it out. So what the Fed's doing is they're saying, you've got that 30-day paper for sale. We'll come buy it from you. So now you have the money to pay Jill and Matt. Even though in 99.9% of the cases, the thing would never have gone that far down into the cup. So the Fed has a lot of things now they're trying to do in all these areas because it's unusual circumstances. Now, whether or not the formula should have been different in the first place and said, well, you really should keep 80% or 90% instead of 40, like you told people, that I guess we have to worry about 2 months from now. But right now, all these little areas are having problems, and the Fed is fighting essentially a fire a day. And they're trying to send people money, too. But now you got to be careful that they don't go so far that we come to the Weimar Republic where they just send everybody a $10,000 check. And all of a sudden, the CPI next month is up 5%. You don't want that either. So it's actually, this is not easy times for those guys either. And I'm not even talking about policy. I'm just talking about running the engine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, we would not want the job of, okay, what's her name? She's had drinks with us once in a while. She does all the money flows out of the Federal Reserve of Chicago. I'll tell you what, today, we would not want that job. Because there's crises popping up everywhere. All of a sudden, there's not money in this market. There's not money in that market. Because there's all these markets that service all these people. And if all of a sudden one of them dries up, you've got an issue. And you'd rather have the Fed buy this thing from, I'm not saying Kemper or whoever it happens to be, you'd rather have them come in and buy those 30-day securities that maybe in retrospect they shouldn't have in that money market than have the thing go down, wouldn't you?
Sure.
So, I mean, when I act like sometimes, and I never try and do it, if I act flippant toward the Fed's job, I'm talking about their policy and bailing out presidents and things like that, or not bailing them out, as Bush 1 still claims he lost because of Greenspan, and maybe he did. But the point is, just in general, our system, and then if you add things going overseas, with banks over there maybe in trouble, and the Fed thinking that they're really the world's banker, this is not an easy job. So the idea is, you know, we should get rid of the Fed. Now that would be a problem, a big problem. You know, so anyway, so I mean, I hope that helped. Did that help at all?
Help with what?
The explanation of what's going on here. When all the, a lot of what the Fed's doing is routine, and a lot of it's policy. And it's unless you sort of know the different systems or the different areas they're talking about, it's hard to figure out which is policy and which is just routine saving of people.
Sure.
And I don't know. Does any, do you ever hear an explanation on any of the TVs or radios of what that is?
Of what the Fed does from a day-to-day perspective versus what they do in a crisis?
Well, I'm
versus
saying
what they do policy-wise?
Well, there's a big difference between sending... well, they're not going to send everybody a check. The there's a big difference between the normal money market operations and adding $500 billion to the commercial paper market because it's flat on its ass. There's a big difference. One is you're saving an entire... you know, $1 trillion a week market type of thing, or trying to, and the other is you're making policy, and it's kind of when they have to start talking about every single one of these areas having problems, it tells me that they're in pretty deep doo doo. How's that for a statement?
There you go.
So what is, when you talk to your names from the basketball and stuff and all this stuff going on, all these guys at home, pretty much?
Oh yeah,
and. Well,
everyone's working from home. All travel, business travel, face-to-face meetings, etc., all postponed or canceled. Everything's being done via teleconference.
I think that when the president was talking yesterday about how if we stick with this policy too long, there's dangers to that as well. And I, by the way, I happen to agree with him.
Of course. Depending on what you read, between 10% and 20% of our entire economy is based on the service industry, which is the restaurants, the hotels, the bars, and if they're all closed or only partially open, that's you know, astronomical. I mean, that's huge.
Well, plus you can never really, despite this best efforts of Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, which is almost enough to. I don't even know where that one came from, but despite the best efforts, you know damn well, Maddie, that the person living down by Bacchanalia's, the three people the lady was telling me about that work at McCormick Place, basically for cash when they need to set up a show, nothing's going to make it down to those people.
Nope.
We know that. I mean, so I think somewhere along the line, you got to get some people back. Back sort of working. Do we have somebody else on the line here? We must have somebody.
Yeah, it's Brendan.
Oh, hey.
I'm still here.
Oh, all right. I didn't know you were still here. I thought you left when Joel was here.
Yep.
Well, opine on what I just said.
Well, I was about to. You know, I think that when you look, I mean, it really is the Hobson's choice about what do you try to do to start the economy again, or do you allow people to go back and mingle to get the economy going and get more people sick and more people dying? You know, I'm of the frame of mind that you want to let the economy figure itself out after we get through this bubble of the crisis. Even flattening the curve is going to take a little while longer. I think this is just showing Trump's impatience right now to show that he wants everything back next week, especially against the advice of all of the medical professionals.
Well, what do you, if you just look at the medical professionals, what do you think? Well, just as a backdrop, Brendan, and I'm not, this is not a policy thing. This is just saying we make these kinds of decisions all the time. Speed limit's 70. If it was 30, we'd save 100,000 lives a year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants it to be 30. Right? We'd rather.
Are you asking how many lives should we be willing to risk right now back going?
What I'm saying is we make those decisions every day. So when you come out as the governor of New York, if it's one life I save by inconveniencing the whole state, I'm going to say BS to that because we're way past that. I'm saying in our traffic stuff and all kinds of stuff, right?
I think this is a little bit different because I mean this is the same analogy that I heard the president say one of his talks of the day that. How many people do we lose in traffic accidents a year? It's the same analogy. That's not a fair comparison. That's not looking at something. I would stay away from that kind of an analogy as far as
what I'm saying is,
traffic laws.
Is we know that we should have worst case, 100,000 hospital beds in Chicago. We got 50 or we got 30. We know what the cost is. I mean, but I'm saying cost of lives versus money we spend are decisions made every day, all the time. One thing I would say for sure, if we had a sample, if we had a test, as Maddie would tell me to say, I'm going to say within days now, we're going to have all kinds of people in this country. Now, the guy in New Orleans, should he stay at home? He already had it. He's not contagious anymore. Can he go back to work?
We don't know that. I mean, it looks like from some of the reports that I've read, even people who have recovered in China may be having a second occurrence of that later on. They may or may not be symptomatic and able to transmit, but they're going through another wave of a recurrence of the illness.
But if they're not,
so I don't think that just because somebody gets through it that they're free and clear.
So we're going to
information yet.
So we're going to keep people at home for 2 years, and have the place become South Africa with people shooting everybody.
No, but we're not at the 2 year mark yet. I think we're a week between the federal government, and we're a week to 2 weeks for many states of putting this imposition in effect. I think we need to let this play out a little bit further.
I don't disagree.
I think that if the curve is lowered, if that big spike is lowered a little bit and leveled out, then the number of beds that are necessary will be available because of the turnover of people getting it, going to the hospital, getting cured or recovering, and then going back home.
All right.
I think it's still a need. We're not to the point yet of being 2 years and shooting each other as zombie-like characters.
Well, they were out of guns at the Big R on Sunday. I was there.
I understand a lot of places are out of ammunition, too.
Yeah. All I'm saying is there's no clear idea. I don't care, really. And by the way, I'm agreeing with what they've done here because of the screw-up they made earlier. But there's no unanimity among governors, among the president, for what has to happen to call off the dogs even partially. And we really don't need 50 different opinions on this. I'm going to say Pritzker.
I agree.
I'm going to say Pritzker has no idea.
This should be coming from the federal level. At a certain point, if you're a wartime president, you've got to act like a wartime president and enforce things uniformly. Now, I'd much rather him say, just from a philosophical level, I would much rather him say, everybody back to work to get the economy going, or everybody stay home, rather than moan and bitch about it and then allow 50 different governors to have 50 different opinions as far as when they impose something and when they don't.
I would say that you've got to give it another couple of weeks to get the test out there. And I think hopefully we'll have a little bit of a cure, or at least some stuff that works better. So our amount of deaths here aren't the same as they are in Italy or China. And if you get those two things going, I think you could talk about lightening up on it in maybe 3 weeks. That would be my hope. Obviously, if you get a vaccine in there, then you're good to go. But I don't see that happening in 3 weeks.
Well, the vaccine is supposed to be at least a year to 18 months away. So that's not a realistic issue. We'll have a vaccine. Who knows about how these other old medicines interact with this, or what side effects are because of the mutation of this virus.
Plus, you do but, have. I mean, we're not young anymore, Brennan. But basically, you've got 65% of the population under the age of 40 that barely even knows they have a cold. So how long can you keep them locked up?
Maddie, how long can we keep you locked up?
I'm going to do what's recommended by the doctors and worry about the greater good and not myself.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
I can tell that you were not one of those people at the beaches in Florida or walking in Washington, D.C. at the cherry blossom.
I try to have some level of common sense, and we'll see if it works.
I've never been within 6 feet of a person on a beach.
Well, there are a lot of people in close proximity on the beaches over the weekend.
Well, there's a lot of people doing a lot of stuff close proximity, and I think that's the way people are when they're young. You know, what can I tell you?
Just yeah, and I think a lot of the people on the beach were trying to get closer in that way, too.
I mean, how many people down there would think of testing their girlfriend? I mean, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Anyway, Brennan, thank you very much. But SP Futures up 104. We come off limit just a hair, but not very much. Same thing with NASDAQ up 305. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite.
It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Loan on Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber in here in the command central, and we have AV on the board. Do we have Mr. Jeff Joseph?
Yes.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. S&P futures off limit. So did you short them limit? Now you're up $6 already.
No, that didn't happen.
NASDAQ
but you're right about the market.
Yeah, we're up. Right. Everything's up. I'm in trouble with my eyes here. The whole thing is green, Jeff. I haven't seen that in like a real long time.
Yeah, how about it?
What do you make? God, where do we start, bud? Maddie and I were thinking that you are probably our biggest China expert. But that's not necessarily where maybe where you want to start. What would you like to talk about first off here? The market, the China, the information.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This morning, I haven't caught up completely, but I certainly found that a news story about that the Princess boat that was held offshore in Japan for while they quarantined the passengers, and they've gone and done some post inspection on that boat, and a verified report came out this morning through Bloomberg that they did find the virus living up to 17 days on surfaces in this review, and that came out this morning, and that's pretty amazing. Now, what wasn't clear is whether or not the virus was still active or contagious at that point, but it was definitely still alive 17 days later, which is contrary to the early reports that. Well, that raises more questions beyond the early reports that the virus lives for 3 days, 72 hours on stainless steel and plastic. So it just speaks to the potential, contagion, and its potential if the virus can live that long on surfaces. So that raises a new concern. And I see that our total, overall, the total has really increased again materially.
Well, why do you think these guys are
up to?
Why do you think they're so shocked when you start
deaths as a and over 46,000 cases at this point, which means only China and Italy are in front of the U.S. on reported cases. So that obviously it's early, but we're not seeing anything near a flattened curve at this point.
What are you seeing? Bullish and bearish on a thing. I'm actually seeing a lot of bullish stuff from the numbers, Jeff. In terms of net, it doesn't surprise me. I don't know why our governors. I've been of the opinion that the thing was here long before we said it was, and I think it's way more entrenched than people think it is, and I think it's not quite as deadly as people think it is. So the fact that they're all of a sudden starting to test more people and finding more cases. And are somewhat horrified about that. I'm like, duh, what'd you expect to find? I mean, I think a real lot of people have it, especially in certain pockets. I think a lot of people are already over it. And I'm somewhat encouraged by the more people that we, let's put it this way, we know what the death total is, right? And the more people we find that have it, to me is almost encouraging because it means that the percentage of people who die keeps dropping.
That's exactly right.
I mean, when people talk about a bad flu year, in many of those years, all of us have gotten it a few times along the way. I say I've never once been counted. I maybe have gone to the doctor afterward where it didn't leave a couple times and got a Z-Pak or something, but I've never once been counted on the common cold. So I don't know. It's not surprising to me that the number of people that have it are way more than the people that are counted, especially when we're not even counting.
That really is the conflict here. That really is the challenge because this is entirely a data driven response, or a proper response needs to be calibrated against the data. That is without question. The only way to fight this is through data and through science, and that much is clear. What isn't clear is what the data is, because there's many reasons to question it, which brings us back to China. China currently shows today 81,000 confirmed cases and 3,200 deaths, which is already significantly exceeded by China, or by Italy, which reports 6,000 deaths already, 6,077. But China had 3,281 deaths recorded and 73,000 patients recovered already. So they're leading with 81,000 total confirmed cases, but nobody really trusts the data from China. You may recall while we were preparing at Luckbox magazine for the China issue and doing our work in advance, long before this became a pandemic and even before it was reaching any serious alarm outside of Wuhan, that we told you that we had evidence and there was evidence that was circulating that they were underreporting their cases materially, that there was video that we had seen of of body bags in schools and at morgues in China, and that they weren't reporting someone as being a confirmed case or a death from the virus if they had passed away before they even reached a doctor, which was the case because of some of the quarantine restrictions that they had, restrictions from people leaving their house, and the manner in which the hospitals were being besieged by patients. They just were not seeing people. So everyone knows the data has been unreported in China. I think everyone's pretty comfortable with that assumption. At the same time, it appears as though we have better data coming out of Italy. So that is your first problem, is what are we really dealing with? I talked about, I mentioned that we're doing a podcast now for the Political Trade, our new podcast from Luckbox Magazine on the political prediction markets. And we had Anthony Scaramucci on a couple of days ago. And I've known Anthony for many years. And so even though it's a new podcast, he agreed to do it, which was nice. And he is, of course, notorious for his short stint as former White House communications director, the shortest ever at 11 days. But what he's less known for, but certainly accomplished for, is the fact that he has a very successful large hedge fund firm called Skybridge Capital, over $10 billion in assets. It's a fund-to-fund firm, and it's a powerhouse. It's had some extraordinary years, and they have a large research team. And he shared on the recent episode of The Political Trade, he shared that they believe over 8 million people in the U.S. will be infected by the virus. And at the same time, to get to your point, they also believe that the fatality rate is going to prove to be much, much lower than what we're seeing in some other places. So that's a real, and I think that uncertainty is clearly what the administration is dealing with, as you see them thinking out loud between a medical response that would encourage quarantine and the business concerns that a one-month shutdown of the economy will no doubt have in terms of repercussions for years and years in the economy.
We have a contributor to the show, I don't know if I mentioned this to you last week, who is, I'll say, hanging around in an Uber with a guy from Western China. This is in, it had to be the first week of February, maybe late January. And the guy from Western China says, my family's from over there, way more than a million people have it, and there's already been way over 100,000 deaths. I don't think the Chinese numbers are even on the planet with what went on over there.
Yes, that's right. Looking at 81,000 today, nobody believes those numbers.
Well, his exact words
on
were,
a per capita basis, it'd be hard to explain how Italy, with I don't know the ratio of population, but I believe it to be at least 20% of China's, maybe even less than that. How Italy would have 63,000 cases right now, and materially more deaths than China. So on a per capita basis, there's no reliable benchmark there at all.
And the deaths, as you come from, we don't want to be harsh, but every single death here in Illinois has been from somebody who was essentially compromised on something else.
Is that the case? I haven't seen that information.
One was a person who had this, and another one was a lady who was, my mom was 80 when she died. I miss her to this day. So it's not like I'm discounting people. Plus, I'm getting up there myself. So
Not like I'm... today, there's 9 deaths in Illinois this morning.
But this happens. I'm stumbling here, not stumbling and asking questions, Jeff, because how much of it is a symptom of another problem? How much of the fact that we don't have enough hospital beds, so we got to put people at home to stem the tide, get in the hospitals and slow it down, which, I agree with. I understand why they're doing it. But are we right on the razor's edge every single year in hospitals' beds, and still we let hospitals close? Is this part of a bigger problem is what I'm always trying to get at, which I think is one of the reasons why you like
it. I think that may not be fair, considering the scope of this and as being an absolute outlier by every possible definition, that if we were... if the idea was to have enough hospital beds to address a pandemic.
No, I don't. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, what we after 9/11. Again, I mentioned this earlier in the show, but it bears repeating. If you and I were in the Oval Office, we would say, okay, if something bad happens, be it a bioweapon, whatever it is, this is just one of many things that could happen, right? What is our list of stuff that we absolutely need? Bandages, Band-Aids, alcohol, you name it. By the way, who are our suppliers? Do we have any saved up? I mean, this is a simple question 20 years after 9/11. It appears mm-hmm. that we have people that are there working, sucking on the boob of society. I don't know where this stuff is. Oh, we get this from Puerto Rico. Oh, by the way, they just had a hurricane. Don't worry about that. We don't have that anymore. This we all get from China. Wait a minute. The same China that the president's been picking a fight for the last year, we get 20 of the 100 things we need in a crisis from China? Well, yeah. Does he know that? Well, he doesn't care, or he doesn't know. I mean, it seems like the meandering around of policy, Jeff, is enough to drive me nuts. I mean, am I just by myself?
Well, and that's why a book like Brigadier General John Spaulding called Stealth War, which was the book that inspired that recent current issue of Luckbox magazine it's called Stealth War with China. But John Spaulding's book, the Stealth War, I just highly recommend it because he came out and really, you know, identified all the different fronts that China is at war with the U.S. on. Not toying with the U.S., but at war, whether it be, you know, 5G or Huawei or the Belt Road Initiative or property, intellectual property infringement or censorship or privacy or spying and trade. And it just chapters on each one of these areas and how severe that war is. And rare metals too, you know, they're not just antibiotics and medical devices and pharmaceuticals, as you've just alluded to, but China has 96% production globally of what are rare, not precious metals, but rare metals that are used in electronics manufacturing and critical communications manufacturing and technologies. And we let that all happen. It was part of, you know, trade policy under the most favored nations, and you know, that really Nixon and Bill Clinton, probably more than anyone, are truly responsible for, and then policy that let that continue to the point that we just literally outsourced manufacturing to China.
Well, we're outsourcing,
which you can say also resulted in the election of President Trump. It's amazing how this misstep with China years ago has had so many repercussions.
If you were a fan of Carl Denninger, which most of the people on the show are, you would phrase it differently. You would say you allowed our corporations to offload pollution and child labor.
Essentially. Yeah. I have a question real quick, going back to your conversation with Anthony Scaramucci. If I heard that correctly, they're predicting that 8 million Americans are going to test positive for the coronavirus, and they're predicting a low mortality rate. I don't think you said the exact mortality rate. My first question would be, everything I've read has gone from either everyone's going to get it at some point, so it's a matter of being ready and dealing with it, or 80% of the people are going to get it, or I've heard between 40 and 70% of the people are going to get it. It sounds like what they're saying is less than 0.5% of the people are going to get it. If only 8 million people are going to get it, that's what, 0.2% of the population.
He has to have a vaccine in there somewhere.
Did he expound on that number, that prediction? Because that's way off with everything I've heard. I hope they're right, certainly. But
way off what you and I think, for sure, Matty.
Yeah.
There's not a vaccine.
No, he didn't expound much beyond that, because then the conversation shifted into the proper economic response and stimulus. But the numbers that you just cited, Matt, are indeed how he expressed it. That if we were testing within the next 2 months, and he acknowledged that we'll never get to those numbers because there won't be enough testing that will ever show those numbers. But those are the numbers that they reached. Right.
Well, Jeff, I think people in leadership spots, and I don't know, I was I was stuck with a bunch of ladies this last weekend because Audrey had some people over, whatever. And a lot of them were, you know, obviously bright people and very opinionated in a lot of stuff. Imagine that. And it's when it comes to leadership, I have a feeling. I mean, I don't know you that well, but I've been pretty impressed all along the way. I got to believe if you're sitting in the Oval Office and you hear an anecdotal news story that, you know, a certain flu came through Chicago and every single hospital bed and every single emergency room was overflowing, I have a hunch you're going to pick up the phone and go, wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to, no matter what happens, we're supposed to have slack that we can turn a parking lot into a ward, we can do something. Where, by the way, are all those programs? It's just like when I was reading about, you know, the years ago about bombing at Pearl Harbor, that Americans basically get bleep-faced every Saturday night. If you want to attack them, you attack them on a Sunday morning. I mean, some of this, I mean, these little pieces of information just keep walking by you. How does our leadership not sit there and go, wait a minute, we're on our worst day in a normal year, we're supposed to have 20-25% slack, not necessarily in beds that are made up with sheets and everything, but in terms of how many people get actually crammed in a hospital because we are worried about something we didn't think of. Obviously, those guys don't worry about any of this stuff. I wouldn't care, Jeff, if there was nobody there, if every desk in Washington was empty, but they're not. They're getting paid to do something. What are they doing?
You're preaching to the choir. And you know, at the same time, I'm someone who ardently believes that every single budget from military to aid, every single budget in this country could be cut by 20%, and good management would still be able to deliver the same amount of goods and services to the citizens. We have an overinflated budget. We have a non-responsive government. You're not telling me anything that's new. But, you know, you would think that we would have learned something more after our 9/11 response, but we did. You know, on the other side, you know, play devil's advocate here. We often, you know, these crises and tragedy all often produce an over-response, right? I mean, you know, we've certainly had our privacy rights infringed upon by some elements of Homeland Security Act.
None of that's going back. 9/11,
yeah, and there's certainly
back.
Areas that we yeah. over-respond. I'm sure there's going to be things that occur as a result of this crisis that are going to represent an infringement on our rights or our interests in some manner. So, you know, we're talking about the failings of human nature. I'm no longer surprised when people underperform.
Jeff.
And I don't expect that to ever change.
We have people that are on this show that think you should be able to run around and force people being 6 feet apart.
Well, yeah, we've all seen the charts. You know, we've seen two things now. You know, we're sharing the same graphics. The Johns Hopkins interactive chart was something I think I mentioned on your show early a couple weeks ago. Now you see it on every broadcast on TV, and that clearly is the go-to dashboard for following the spread of this virus at a global basis, and you know, down to the countries and down to the states. But we've also seen the chart that shows how the cases, reported cases and deaths are, what the trajectory is that plots every country against each other. And you see that, you know, the big concern right now and all this ongoing reference to the flattening of the curve is that we are in a hockey stick climb right now, that is occurring in the same manner following what occurred in France and Spain and in Italy, of course, that has really resulted in, you know, devastating consequences. But when you look, there are three outliers that jump out when you look at that chart where you do see a flattening. One is Korea, one is Singapore, one is China, but I'm not counting that among the three because they took so much devastation along the road with it. And then there's Japan. And in each of those instances, whether it be Korea and Singapore, you have an authoritarian government that will restrict, you know, it's just part of living there that they're able to restrict the activity of its citizens, and that successfully flatten the curve. I mean, in Singapore,
I think Korea.
You can't drop gum on the sidewalk, which is true. Yeah. That's not a myth. And they certainly can, quarantine its citizens and keep them at a proper distance and cut down their hours.
I think Korea,
and they effectively did that, and they flattened out the curve.
Jeff, I think Korea.
And in Korea, of course, they're going to have no problem, you know, restricting the activities of the citizens as well. And they did that, and they flattened out the curve. But I think what's most notable is Japan, where they are less authoritarian, but they have a legacy of hygiene awareness. You know, I mean, we've all seen the pictures for decades with people wearing face masks in Japan and China, and always wonder what they're doing on a daily. You know, we know there's pollution, but you know, why? But it's part of their legacy. Hygiene is part of their legacy, and that alone, those habits that are part of their culture, is why they have a flattened curve out there. So to your question that we could do this if the government took stricter actions, I think that's what they're wrestling with. But at the same time, like I said at the outset, what you can see the administration wrestling with out loud is what impact is this going to have on the economy as a result? And, you know, where are we? It's just too early. We do need more data. We need another week of data to see what is actually happening right now. Is this being flattened out or not?
Two things. When I've read on Korea, they have a bazillion more tests than we do, and they encourage people that have no symptoms to go through drive-thrus and get tested with no symptoms. And those people that have tested positive have heeded the advice of government to go home and stay by yourself for 10 days. So they're intercepting it when people are contagious and not when they have symptoms. And we are reluctant to do that. We have not done that. Matter of fact, Fauci flat out said, I don't want to give any test to anybody who doesn't have symptoms, which is absolutely
the wrong approach.
Yeah,
and that's hard to reconcile against something that occurred, a story that broke late last night, is that a 17-year-old boy in the U.K., died a day after being tested positive. So, you know, he had very little symptoms. And then went and got tested, was found positive, and died the following day. So that's shattering news on many levels because of this naivety we might have collectively about the impact of the virus on younger people. And then secondly, that speaks to your suggestion that maybe it makes sense for more people to be tested.
You need to be tested. I don't know if we sent,
which of course does. Look, there's always things that come out that are just not clear. You know, clearly, listen, I'm willing to give any administration a little bit of room on what clearly is, by every definition, a black swan. That term's been abused by every talking head and mathematician for decades, you know, in the 15 years since Taleb published that book. And everything is a black swan. Well, this clearly is a black swan, an unexpected event with, you know, massive repercussions and an absolute outlier in every possible way. So being properly prepared for it, that's, you're never properly prepared for a black swan, and that's why it's called a black swan. But it is fair to criticize the response, and two things stand out to me. One of them is this ridiculous little lie that people should not wear masks that was floated at the outset, that people intuitively knew, well, wait a second, doctors are wearing masks, people walk around every day in pollution in China wearing masks, why should I not wear a mask?
They pull the
and the fact, to be clear, and it's a fact, is that you are safer with a mask than without one, and no one can deny that. When asked that question, you know, what you'll hear is health officials say, well, we need them for healthcare professionals. But the fact of the matter is, if you have a mask, you're smart to wear one because you're safer. And there is zero evidence to contradict that. So that little lie was annoying. But the biggest, the bigger problem, which there's been no good answer to, and fortunately, you know, Trump has put Fauci in front, and even Pence is more stabilizing than Trump's influence when he speaks to people. He's certainly no Cuomo, but we didn't need this outbreak to learn that. But there has been no good answer. If you were to ask 1,000 people,
Jeff, you gotta hold that thought, buddy. We gotta go to
you understand why there were not more tests available early. There was never been a clear answer for that, and that is going to continue to haunt this administration.
All right, we got to go to break, Jeff. Hold all those thoughts, bud, because I have a little bit of comeback on a couple of them. S&P futures now only up 88. We were up limit 113 for a bit. NASDAQ futures up 274. Good stuff. We'll get back, Mr. Jeff Joseph, Mr. Matt Weber, AV. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber in the studio. We have AV on the board. We have Mr. Jess Joseph on the phone. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. And by the way, we were up limit most of the night, which is up 113 in the S&Ps. We've come off limit or trading up 95, so it's 4.2% versus 5. NASDAQ futures are up 300. Again, they are off limit as well. The Dow... Dow just flipped off and is flipping back on. Our individual stocks at Boeing up 1188. They were $90 a couple days ago and under trading 117.50. I guess they're going to get some help from the government. Apple's up 880. Apple traded like 220 yesterday. Now it's 233, so it's bounced back quite a bit. Dow's up 778. That's 4.21%. Again, that's off limit as well. Over in Europe, we've got rallies here pretty much holding. DAX up 5.36%, FTSE up 215, 4.3, CAC around up 172, 4.4, as we're talking more G7, central bank action and so forth, doing her best to prop things up. Nikkei up 7%, 1204, Shanghai up 62, that's 2.3%, Hang Seng up 967, 4.4. Now they were down 1,000 yesterday, so it's almost an exact comeback for those guys. 10-year yield actually is up now, even with the money the Fed was pouring in yesterday, to 0.84. The reactions you're getting out of bonds are not necessarily what you'd expect to get from just looking at the central bank actions. Bund, minus 0.35. Japan, minus point. This is not a minus. This is a positive 0.04. They're still above water over there. UK is 0.43. Oil up today, but still only up to $24. That's up 64 cents. Brent up 91 cents, $27.94. Natural gas, $1.64. RBOB gas, you're going to see guys like Jeff Joseph running out and filling up their tank. 45 cents a gallon, RBOB gas. That's unbelievable. So you could almost be looking at like $1.50 gas. That's in the summertime or close to getting there. Gold up $89. It was up $100 earlier. $16.57. Silver up 60 cents, $13.87. Copper, wow, up 8 cents, 2.17. That thing hasn't moved in ever. It's moving today. AV, what do you guys? Traffic, weather, sports? No sports, just traffic, weather.
Good morning. Patchy morning fog will change to a mix of clouds and sun during the day. Mostly day will remain cloudy. The highest of the day should be 41 and the lowest 34. Currently in Phoenix, 54 degrees, sunny and clear day with a few passing clouds at night. The highest is 78 and the lowest 55. The traffic is clear. We have one accident, a crash on Belmont at Kimball Avenue involving a Chicago Police Department. That's what I got.
That's it, eh?
Yeah, no, that's good for now.
We've noticed the traffic, not much, but when people do crack up, they're going a lot faster, Matty. What do you think?
That's true, yeah.
That's definitely true. driving back on the Kennedy yesterday at 8:30 in the morning, obviously you're expecting a traffic jam, being the tail end of the morning rush, and it's clear, and so that's nice. You're like, oh, this is great. The expressways are clear, but everyone's flying and changing lanes and going faster than they've ever gone on that expressway, yep. And so that's a little scary.
The nice thing about rush hour is it's relatively safe.
Right, exactly. The little fender bender that you might get into is not hurting anybody.
So, Jeff, all kinds of stuff. I just, when you look at decisions like this, and I think we're all kind of beating around the bush on this one, is you always have to know, I mean, when this is all over, and I hope that sooner rather than later, I'd sure like to see us come out with a vaccine and somewhat of a, I won't say a cure, I don't know about there's ever a cure for the flu, but something that instead of, one in a certain amount of many people dying, we have one in 10 times that many people. And I think we do need to look at our capacity, our supply chain, and all these things that we sort of should have looked at. And, and I don't know why this is not ongoing. I mean, it's kind of a, one of the issues with the American system of government. And I'm not going to blame Trump or Obama or anybody on this, but it seems like the British system, which looks pretty odd to us, at least the people, now again, the flip side of this is they become career people. The flip side of it is, you leave the people in place that are experts in their field, and I'm going to say when a prime minister comes in, he probably gets rid of, I'm going to say, 30 people. And here, when a new president comes in, he gets rid of like 1,500 people. And there's a big brain drain and change there, and that maybe a lot of times is not all that warranted. I don't know the change in policy between one administration having a pandemic group, the next one not. Now, whether it was duplicated other places, I'm not going to jump all over Trump for that. But, I mean, we'll just because if somebody, because that's the name, it doesn't mean it can't be duplicated some other place. It just seems like somewhere we need to stop fighting for like a month, Jeff, and just all the things we do as a government, are we doing them all that? Well, this whole kind of idea that every single school board is making their own decisions without any kind of test. Every single governor is making his own decisions. Now we're going to have I don't disagree with the fact that we should have gotten some people home for a while to find out what we're dealing with here. I don't think if you were to ask 50 governors what's going to be the all clear point for you, there'd be 50 different answers. And I don't know how far we go with that, Jeff. I mean, it just seems odd to me that we're set up this way.
Yeah, well, we're not going to solve state versus federal rights questions on this call, but you know, you can perhaps the bright side of that is that there are two levels of response at the federal level and at the state level. There's probably something to be said about that that's positive. I think the notion that we're going to ever, you know, sit back and reassess and do something collectively. If there was ever a test of that, you're seeing it right now in real time with the bill that failed to pass the Senate yesterday. And I can't say I have my arms around this completely, but listening to CNBC this morning and reading some early reports of the Senate bill that wasn't passed is that it was just overwhelmed with carve-outs to special interest groups. And a lot of finger pointing at the Democrats for adding things about the green economy and about diversity and about this is all being contingencies for this bill being passed. I don't know because I personally haven't been able to dig deep into this yet to know to what extent that's true, but I'll tell you one thing. If that's indeed the case and more days go by without a stimulus bill being passed, there will be a lot of blame to go around. This is not the time to be addressing your core politics or your political passions or your special interests. This is the time, and we saw it, you know, it's one thing that Scaramucci spoke about. It was a long conversation on that political trade podcast, and one of them was about the Obama bailout and how much pork was in that. And he's a strong advocate, and he announced a plan as well that he proposed as to direct payments to taxpayers, you know, in the context of Andrew Yang's proposed payments, that we should just cut through all the nonsense and write checks and send them out directly, and that all these special provisions and special interest group payouts is not something that should be occurring. And remember, this is a guy that is a pound the table anti-Trumper that will do absolutely anything he can within his powers to make sure he is not reelected. But at the same time, I think it's fair to say he calls balls and strikes pretty fairly, and he is and he is basically warning the Democratic lawmakers and that this is not the time to be playing politics.
I'm going to say, Jeff,
and it appears as though that's what occurred. If I were to trust the reports on CNBC this morning, that's what occurred last night.
CNBC.
So we'll see. This is, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But the bottom line is, people need an aide. We all know all of our friends in business. There are very few businesses that are, you know, there's the specialty stories, but there are very few businesses that aren't being just severely impacted here. Not to mention peoples and families and workers, and this is not the time.
I'm going to say two things. One is CNBC has become disgustingly Republican conservative in my mind. Not so much Republican, but they're big businesses because that's who comes on their show. Okay, so they're never.
No, they've always been. I think they've always, you know, I mean, they were cheerleading the .com rally right up until its last minute.
Yeah.
I think they've always been, you know, a business lobbying group, but first and foremost. So I'm.
But I mean, these people. Why do you think for a second they will not be shameless? If Jeff Joseph's clone is a senator from Carolina, and the chicken manufacturer has been stuffing your back pocket for 10 years, this bill is a massive opportunity to get something in there for the chicken manufacturers, even though nobody can say they got harmed at all. You're going to take that opportunity. It's just the way these people are. Not like a bill every week. You've got to find a bill. You got to get it on there. Everything that you've been supporting or the person you've been supporting for the last decade, here's your chance. I mean, and I got to believe that every single big company, you're going to find stuff in here about giving money to these the same pharmaceuticals. So, and they're going to have the money, and they're going to turn around and buy the product from somebody who's already been, four or five takeovers last week in small pharmaceuticals that have been working on this stuff. So you're going to give the money to Merck so they can buy the little guy? I mean, we know what's going to happen, Jeff, and it really sucks. I mean, you and I are absolutely, but, and of course, if the Democrats can find a way to get something green in there, which has nothing to do with anything, they're going to do it. I mean, and both sides, whoever has the floor is going to pick out three items that the other side did that are going to sound disgusting, and they're going to lob it out to the population. In fact, none of that stuff should be in there. I think we agree on that, but it's there.
That's correct. That's right. And it is disgusting.
I would say that if you went through the bill, if we went through it, God knows how many pages it's going to be.
It's 140 pages. No, I'm sorry. It's 1,400 pages.
I'm going to say
pages.
That if you and I went through it, it would come out
1,400 pages of pork.
I would say that you
for
and I
what
would,
should be, you know, an immediate direct stimulus, you know, bill.
But if you don't specify that you're giving the money to this industry and how they're supposed to work it down the chain, it won't work down the chain. So there needs to be detail so people get out of it. Yet there doesn't need to be. I think you and I would probably cut it down by 400 pages, easy.
Well, why does there need to be $500 billion for corporations and stock buyback language and all that crap?
Well, because they don't want people. They're going to say they're going to put some salve on the AOCs of the world. They're going to say we're going to give $50 billion to United Airlines, but oh, by the way, you can't buy stock back for a decade just to pacify people.
As they should. But you can get that done in a page.
Right. Yeah.
Why can't it just
be? You know, that does make sense, and quite frankly, that's been echoed on both sides of the aisle now at this point, that there should not be stock buybacks when you're receiving government funds in the form of a bailout, and that, you know, that's why that's when the system can work, when there's strong voices of both sides that make a case, and that's accepted as a consensus now. So that, you know, that's an example of something that can be addressed pretty simply, though.
Agreed, but what does that have to do with this? This is, in my opinion, this is stimulus for working people that are out of their job or are underemployed right now that need relief. What does this have to do with corporations getting billions of dollars?
They're broke.
Well, first and foremost, it should be, yes. But remember, the we're intertwined, so it'd be... You can't just say, okay, we're just going to give people money, so that's great. So you're an airline employee, and the airlines are grounded now, and the airline's going to go out of business. So that $1,500 check is going to last you, what, 2 or 3 months? What are you going to do about a job? So we can't just say this is just about putting money in people's pockets. There are some businesses, unfortunately, that are going to have to be supported. There's no question about that, because otherwise these estimates of 30% unemployment, that's distinctly possible. You have major corporations go out, certainly those that are drivers of the economy, like the airlines. In the long run, the people get hurt too. So they must be addressed, and it's fair to address the terms in which they receive the money. That's fair as well.
How about everybody on the board is off?
Yeah.
Jeff, well, I mean, the guys brought back, they bought stock back at essentially $90. They bought $37 billion worth of stock back. I won't say all $90, but way higher than this. How big of a mistake do you got to make to be tossed? If you and I did that, we'd be tossed.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Everything Jeff said makes perfect sense, and I agree with it.
That's why it's hard to argue with.
But part of me is like, well, not all the airlines are failing. Some of the airlines, I mean, everyone's being hurt by this. Everyone in the world's being hurt by this, not just the airlines. We get that. I mean, that it's affecting everyone. But some airlines have been run really well, like Southwest and others, that aren't broke every single time something goes wrong. And others are not. Why not let the capitalistic markets play out? And some businesses are going to get through this because they're run better, and some are not.
I think you, as much as I absolutely cannot stand United Airlines, I'm going to say when your president stops all travel to the Far East, I'll say, and that's where most of your cash cow is, it's not something you could totally plan at.
That's your force majeure event.
But now, on the other hand, Jeff, is 20 years ago when 9/11 happened, United was so amazingly leveraged. I don't think they owned a plane, right? Everything was leased. Everything was this, and all they did was grease the people that run the place, and to a certain extent the unions. And now here we are, 20 years later. Don't you think that the 2017, when they bought $3.7 billion worth of stock, that there would be a guy named Jeff Joseph or Tom Howe or Matt Weber on the board that would say, "Wait a minute, why don't we take 500 or 400 million of this, and the next time we pick up a plane from Boeing, we just give them a check and actually buy the damn thing. And maybe 20 years from now, we actually own 20 or 25% of our planes. Why don't we try and do that instead of give out bonuses and buy stock back? Because right this year, we could buy 6 planes. I know it's, you know, that's a pain in Lake Michigan compared to how many they have. But if we do this every year, we actually may find out that we own 30% of our stock. And oh, by the way, the next time there's a big problem like this, we, instead of having to pay, you know, 100 lessors, we only got to pay 70, and it's a lot easier. I mean, but no planning like that ever is along the way, because the job is to maximize the money for these people who run these places, as Eric calls it, the management class. Well, obviously, this is not working, Jeff. I mean, this is clearly not working. Now, how do we stop it? How do we make it easier for, you know, how do we stop ETFs from voting with the management all the time? How do we stop mutual funds? And if somebody like you and I want to put like one guy on there and actually run for him, why does the SEC resist us? I mean, has the behavior of these corporate boards in the last 20 years after 9/11 been anything less than reprehensible? Not everyone, but yep. I mean, for God's sake, well, what more do we need to see?
Yeah, yeah. No argument.
But how do you do that? I mean, I don't want to change the corporate system. I think it actually works very well. It was a tremendous invention. But how have these things gotten so co-opted that all they do is shove money to each other and everybody else's boards? I mean,
well, it's those little loopholes. So you can find some solace in the fact that it takes us forever, you know, as Winston Churchill said, right? Americans always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other means. So we've seen this long enough that we're finally waking up to the fact you cannot do corporate stock buybacks if you're using government bailout money. You can't. So that is going to be an outcome of this. So that it is a positive thing. And listen, I share your pessimism, but we are incrementally going to at least address that issue.
But it was a really bad idea to start with, Jeff. I mean, their story was, we lease everything and we pay ourselves big dough. But
that's our business model.
I mean, don't take this wrong. You're kind of a simple guy. So am I.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to say, so Jeff, we want to open up a hot dog stand. What do you think the first thing?
Which I had.
Which you did.
Kid, yeah.
I'm going to say, Jeff, what's the first thing we do? Well, Chief, we go out and we buy a hot dog maker. Oh, Jeff, obviously you don't know squat, bud. We're going to lease this. We're going to pay 4 cents a month on this thing. Why would we ever buy it? Nobody does that. I mean, you're going to say, well, we need to buy a hot dog. Oh no, we're not buying that. Say we're going to lease. We're going to leverage this thing out to get go. To where if we make 48 cents the first month, you and I could take the whole 48 cents. You would never set a place up like that. Neither would I. Yet this the airline's been doing this for, not all of them. Delta is more conservative, but United's been doing this forever. And how many times have we been going to bail them out?
Yeah.
How many people in Chicago get to buy other hospitals and shut them down? And all of a sudden, hey, we don't have any beds. Well, is anybody saying we need 20,000 beds in Chicago? We got 10? I'm not for central planning at all, but I am for a little bit of common sense. And a question I want to ask both you guys. I mean, and I do not know the answer to this, and this here is the rub. Okay, we get the common cold every year, all right? And people have decided, well, we couldn't stop it if we wanted to. And, you know, who knows how many people, because of complications and other things. Actually, Audrey went out to her Asian doctor friend, and he said one of the biggest problems that you have in the news media is people don't understand how dangerous the regular common cold and the regular flu are, and how dangerous they are for people that have problems. So is this thing the news media and everything ramps up on this one, people are going to think this is the first time it's ever happened. Okay, so mm-hmm. we get a particularly bad flu from somewhere. It comes in one year. It was H1N1. That was maybe worse than normal. And all of a sudden, for 3 weeks, every hospital bed's taken, and some schools close because they have in those situations, where all the kids have them. And oh, by the way, you get a big bulge in the amount of people that are compromised dying. And we don't ever try and, not saying we shouldn't, by the way. I'm saying we never once say, oh no, nobody's flying from Australia to the U.S. given the fact that it's down there, or South Africa or Rio de Janeiro or someplace. We just say bring it on. Okay, now we've got this one, arguably, is worse. Okay, and now we're at the end of the day, you know, when we come back with if we turn out it was, I'm hoping here, it was 10% worse or 20% worse in terms of actual deaths that wouldn't happen anyway. I guess I don't know where the line is. I'm thinking we're doing the right thing here by saying people to cool your jets on this one for a while and stay home. But I don't know where the line is. Now next year, if it's a particularly bad regular flu, are we going to do the same thing? Are we going to try and stop the common cold? I mean, I don't know, Jeff. I mean, it's not a one trick situation. There's a million variables out there.
Yeah, but there is an upside to this. As a, you know, someone who's been involved in the markets, you can certainly see that this is entirely data driven. And the result of this is we'll have some extraordinary data on the management of pandemics in the 21st century. So we will get something out of this because this is the response right now we're guessing as to what the proper response is and what the curve is going to look like and what the natural trajectory would be under various response circumstances. We don't know any of that, and we will know as a result of this. So I think in this case where this isn't, there aren't, the proper call is the result of proper data, we will have a distinct advantage going forward in addressing, you know, pandemics anyways.
I think this one is unusual in the sense that with SARS,
there'll be hedge funds right now that could create algorithms on responses based on the data that is going to come out of this.
Well, at SARS, we knew everybody who had SARS knew they were sick. When at the end of the day with this one, I mean, I've been reading too much stuff, Jeff. Maybe that's my problem. Mm-hmm. The kid in Korea last week, they figured out like the day he got infected. So they charted him from start to finish when he was still, contagious and when he wasn't. At the end of the day, they interviewed the kid and they said, well, he was a kid. He's 25. He goes, you know what? If I didn't get tested, I've had colds worse than this. I wouldn't have stopped anything. Mm-hmm. That to me is the single biggest problem with this disease is how many people have it and don't know it.
Yeah, yeah, without question.
I think if you and I had SARS, we'd find our doctor.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jeff, thank you very much. As usual, amazingly informative, buddy. And you take care of yourself and stay away from this. We're up to almost.
You're the same. We'll see you, Matt.
We're up to almost limit again. Up 107. NASDAQ up 348. So we're up 4.9. So pretty much there. Thank you, Matty. Thank you, AV. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.